You're so old. You know, it's okay.
These days, my mom has started to settle into living alone. She tells me her life is more in the microcosm, and what she means is she's watching the birds at the bird feeder, she searches for butterflies in the summer, she works in her garden. Her close friends have become closer, she needs them more now. They're there for each other. Having Harold gone makes her remember so much more about her childhood, and that makes her miss him even more. But the memories don't go away. They're there for her when she next needs them. For Making Contact, I'm Stephanie Geyer-Stevens in Falmouth, Massachusetts.
And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. Do you have a story to share? Send it to us on Facebook or on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. For more information about Making Contact, go to radioproject.org. That's also where you can get our podcasts, download past shows, and make a difference by supporting our work. The Making Contact team includes Lisa Rudman, Quan Booth, Jasmine Lopez, Monica Lopez, and Alice Wong. I'm Laura Flynn. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Identities and Futures. Women and non-binary folks speak out March 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Holocene in Portland. Identities and Futures is an evening of performances, animation, and DJs, including DJ Kim Fizzy, Lily Croft, Jean Etheridge, Pocha Radicales, and more. Again, that's Identities and Futures, Women and Non-Binary Folks Speak Out, March 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Holocene, 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to Voices for the Animals on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
You can value them all. You really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying her habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Welcome to Voices for the Animals. I'm Deb Stedman, your host, and my guest today is Brian Posowitz, administrator and founding board member for Humane Oregon. We'll be talking about his work promoting humane treatment of animals through the legislative process. Hello, Brian, and thank you for being here today.
Hello, and thank you very much for having me.
Okay, let's get started by hearing more about your organization. Please tell us about its mission and how long you've been advocating for animals in Oregon.
Sure. Humane Oregon was formed in 2014. The primary purpose of the organization is to have an animal welfare organization that's able to support the campaigns of individual political candidates, so to have a what they call a political action committee, and also to be able to do an unlimited amount of lobbying. So most of the nonprofit organizations out there, including nonprofit organizations dedicated to animal welfare, the way they're set up under the tax laws so that people can deduct the contributions to the organizations, they're set up under a provision of the tax code referred to as 501c3. And the restrictions that go with being recognized under that part of the tax code include that you can only do a limited amount of lobbying, and you can't participate at all in the campaigns of individual candidates. And so what happened in 2014 is a group of animal welfare advocates, volunteers primarily with the Humane Society for the United States, were sitting around talking about this. And what was happening was we would be down in the legislature advocating on animal welfare issues. And then when campaign season rolled around, some of our champions would come to us and say, hey, how about helping my campaign? And we didn't have a way to do that.
So your hands were tied. Yeah,
exactly. So there was sort of this gap in the movement, I guess. And so we formed Humane Oregon primarily to fill that gap. And so we are set up so that we can raise money and contribute to the campaigns of individual political candidates that we think will be good for animal welfare. And we can also get involved in their campaigns as volunteers, just sort of boots on the ground kind of thing.
Okay, so your funding, are you funded in part by Humane Society of the United States, or is it all private donations?
We are not funded at all by Humane Society of the United States, and in fact, we're not connected to them at all. We're funded entirely by private donations. And even though we started as a group of volunteers primarily with Humane Society for the United States, as we've sort of moved forward, we've expanded, I would say, in two primary ways. One is that we've started to incorporate people from a lot of different parts of the animal welfare movement. For example, we've got a board member now from Portland Audubon, Bob Salinger. We have a board member from a group called Wild Aid. His name is David Cracky. We also have a board member from Humane Society of the United States, Scott Beckstead. And so we're bringing in different parts of the animal community behind this mission of helping political candidates that we think will be good for animals and animal welfare.
So it's really a coordinated effort amongst several different animal advocate groups throughout the state of Oregon.
Yes, that's what it's becoming, and I think that is definitely our vision.
Okay, and if you could tell us a little bit about exactly how you participate in Oregon's political process. Do you meet with the legislators, or do you testify at hearings?
Yes. Well, we started out with this vision, as I say, of just helping candidate campaigns, both financially and with volunteer help. And what we've learned as we've gone forward is that you can't just do that because they won't remember you when the issues come up during the legislature and so forth. So we've learned that we have to also be there to advocate on the issues, and primarily that's in the state legislature, but it's also happening in other forums as well. For example, I was just down at the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting last Friday, testifying on an animal issue there. And these issues are coming up in local government as well. And so we're also appearing in these different public policy forums to advocate for animal welfare as well.
I'm glad to hear that. And does Humane Oregon ever propose laws or help to draft legislation?
So we have not done that yet. It's definitely something that we think we will be doing in the future. As I said, we formed in 2014, and that was, you know, barely enough time to get involved in that 2014 election cycle. And then the 2015 legislative session was upon us. We've gotten a little more organized since then, of course, and we did talk a little bit about authoring or promoting a bill for the 2017 session. We kicked around some ideas, and we decided, well, let's wait until we're a little better organized still before we take that on. So we're not doing that yet, but we definitely intend to do that in the future, and we've got some great ideas, we think.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. But traditionally, then, where do these ideas for legislation which promote the humane treatment of animals, traditionally, where have they come from?
Oh, there are just so many ideas. And as we sit down and talk about these things, it seems like there's no shortage of ideas that come up. There are just so many different ways that you can improve animal welfare. And so I think it just comes from interacting with people involved in the issues, from collaboration. And yeah, you'd be surprised at how many ideas come up, but it can be just an extraordinary amount of work to take something from an idea phase to actually getting it
implemented
into public policy.
And then how do you go about identifying elected officials who are animal friendly?
So we do that in a few different ways. In the first election cycle we were involved with, that was the 2014 election cycle, we hadn't been around and hadn't been around previously, and so we didn't have what we do now, which is we create a legislative scorecard to show how candidates vote on animal welfare issues. So what we did in that first election cycle was we created a short survey on animal welfare issues. And we sent that out to, at this point, the primary elections were over. So we sent that out to all the candidates running in the general election for the Oregon legislature. And we just asked them to respond to some questions we had, I think, on five or six animal welfare type issues. And then we evaluated those survey responses. We followed up with them individually if we thought we wanted clarity on an answer. And then we based some endorsements that we made on that interview process, and then we also followed up with some campaign contributions based on those endorsements.
I love that idea of having a scorecard of how the elected officials actually voted on or what their intentions were toward animals. I'd love to get a hold of that information. Is it accessible?
Yes, you can find, we did legislative scorecards for, there's been one full legislative session, which is the 2015 session, and then one of what they call, it's a short or abbreviated session that happened in 2016, and there were a couple of animal-related issues in that session as well. But for both sessions, we created legislative scorecards where we identify the bills affecting animals that were up for a vote during that legislative session. And we show how each state representative and how each state senator voted on those bills. And you can find those on our website.
Okay. And why don't you mention what your website is?
Our website is humaneoregon.org. Humane Oregon is one word, .org. And there's a tab at the top of the website that will lead you to the legislative scorecards.
Great. And why don't you talk about who some of the animal champions, as you call them, are, who are currently in the state legislature?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of good people, and you can see from our legislative scorecards that there's a fair number of state representatives, which is in the House of Representatives, and a fair number of state senators who have so far scored 100% on the animal-related issues that we've scored. But I would say to name just a few who are especially great. In the House of Representatives, Dave Gomberg from Lincoln City is a real great champion for animals, not only voting the right way all the time, but also being willing to sponsor animal-friendly legislation. He's a very frequent sponsor of animal-friendly legislation. Representative Ken Helm from the Beaverton area is also a great supporter of animal welfare. And he was sort of the primary person behind a bill that passed in 2016 to substantially increase the financial penalties for poaching wildlife. Ann Leininger from Lake Oswego is also someone we like a lot. And Chris Gorsuch from Troutdale is also a good supporter of animal welfare. He was one of the few on his House committee. He was actually the only one on his House committee who voted against the bad wolf bill that passed in the 2016 session. And then on the in the state Senate, the Senate President Peter Courtney is a great advocate for animal welfare.
He's been a longtime friend of animals.
He has, and he kind of went the wrong way on the wolf bill last session, I have to say.
But, disappointing.
But he's got so many great credits in his record that we still really like him a lot. Mark Haas from Beaverton is also a great supporter of animal welfare. Sarah Gelser from Corvallis, Michael Dembro from Portland, Richard Devlin, just to name a few.
Okay, super. And would you say that there is bipartisan support for animal issues down in Salem, or does it, on your scorecard, does that indicate that it breaks by party lines?
So, we think animal welfare really has some great potential to be a bipartisan issue. I think that there's nothing about compassion for animals that's really a democratic idea or a Republican idea. And so we're really optimistic that it can be a bipartisan issue, and we're really hopeful. It's really important to us to be a nonpartisan organization and to support candidates from any political party. I think as it stands right now, the Democrats do tend to be better on animal welfare than the Republicans. That tends to be what we see. But we're very optimistic that that the issue will be sympathetic on both sides of the aisle. And we did, you know, in our first election cycle, we endorsed and supported Bruce Starr for the state Senate. He's a Republican. Unfortunately, he didn't win. And then although we also really like the person who has that seat now, Chuck Riley is also good on our issues. And then in this last election, we also endorsed and supported a Republican from the Beaverton area as well. So we try to be nonpartisan, and we think this does not need to be a partisan issue.
Good. I hope you're right. Let's turn now to what actually has been accomplished in Salem during the past legislative session that promotes the humane treatment of animals. I think that there were 5 animal-friendly laws passed in the 2015 session, in addition to ballot measure 100, recently voted for last November. I think we're going to take a short break now, but right after that, can you bring us up to speed on these 6 victories and what they mean for animals here in the state of Oregon? Let's pause for a break now, and we'll return shortly, so please stay tuned. We're back now, and you're listening to Voices for the Animals on 90.7 FM, KBOO Portland. We've been talking with Brian Posowitz of Humane Oregon about his efforts to advocate for the passage of humane animal treatment laws here in our state. Brian, we were just about to talk about the victories that were accomplished in the past legislative session down in Salem. Can you talk about those 5 or 6 victories that we had?
So I think you're probably referring to the 2015 legislative session, right?
Yes. If I said it incorrectly, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's fine. So, well, first of all, I guess before going to that, in the last session in 2016, we did have one big victory, which was the enhanced penalties for wildlife poaching that I mentioned before. That was proposed in 2015, didn't make it through the process, but it finally made it through in the 2016 legislative session. But in the 2015 session, yes, there were some good bills passed for animals. There was a bill that increased the penalties for sexual abuse of an animal, and made it a crime to possess visual depictions of sexual animal abuse. There was a bill that made it lawful for state social workers to report to law enforcement where they see instances of animal abuse and neglect. Previously, well, and still, social workers are very limited in what they're supposed to disclose about the people they work with. But this bill created an exception for when they witness animal abuse and neglect so that it can be reported to law enforcement and somebody can do something about that. There was also a very important bill. This was primarily advocated by the Animal Legal Defense Fund, which added to what they call the list of statutory nuisances a place where animal abuse and neglect is occurring. And with that added to the list, a private citizen can bring a lawsuit to stop that nuisance activity, including activity that would involve the abuse and neglect of animals.
So in other words, if an ordinary citizen sees that his neighbor is beating his dog and has seen it happen several times, or the dog is left out in extreme weather with no shelter or whatever, would this be something that would fall under this new law?
Yes, I think that would be the kind of thing we're talking about, where there's an ongoing situation of animal abuse and neglect. It would be considered a a nuisance by statute, and a private citizen could bring a lawsuit to stop it.
And how would a private citizen bring a lawsuit? Is there any help out there, like that Special Attorney General, Jake Kamens, who prosecutes animal cruelty cases, or is it a totally a private effort?
Yeah, so this law deals with what would be a private civil lawsuit to stop a nuisance activity. It would really be separate from the criminal type prosecution that you were alluding to. And the way somebody would use this law would be to, they would need to go out and find an attorney to represent them. And maybe the attorney would be familiar with the statute, maybe not, but could obviously look at it. Another option I think that a person might take advantage of if they thought they were in that situation would just be to check with the Animal Legal Defense Fund, which, as I said, was the primary promoter of the legislation. They might be able to give some advice on that issue.
Okay, so Animal Legal Defense Fund would be the first contact to make, probably.
Could be, or just going to a private attorney.
Okay. And then there was also a law passed, I believe, having to do with dogs trapped in hot cars.
Yeah, and that was just to make it clear that if for law enforcement, if they come upon a situation where there's an animal inside a car that's obviously suffering, that this was to make it clear under the law that they had the authority to break into that car and resolve that situation.
So I, as a concerned citizen, couldn't break that window glass myself, but I would have to call the police to come and do it if I felt a dog were in jeopardy, a dog or a cat or any animal were in jeopardy.
I think that's right. This law just authorizes law enforcement to do it. So the appropriate way to respond to that situation would be to try to involve law enforcement. There's talk from time to time about authorizing private citizens to do that, and it's been done in other states. It gets a little complicated and controversial.
Okay. And there were also at least two big disappointments in that session, in that same 2015 session as well. Can you talk about those two, the dogs in the pickup trucks?
Yeah. So we were not involved in the dogs in pickup trucks issue. That was primarily an Oregon Humane Society bill. And it basically, the bill would have done two things. One, it would have added the bed of a truck to the places on a car where you couldn't have an unsecured animal. There is an existing law that said you can't have a dog on the fender and the hood and places like that. And this would have added the bed of a truck to that list of places where you couldn't have a dog.
Exempting working agricultural dogs.
Exactly. And there was also an exemption for working agricultural dogs. And mm-hmm. and the brief description of the bill just referred to that exemption. And there was, I think, a little bit of uncertainty among legislators whether this was a bill to create an exemption for working agricultural dogs or whether it was a bill to add truck beds to the places where you couldn't have an unsecured dog. And that, I think, was part of the trouble that it ran into, was people sort of got confused about what the bill would do. And I think some, if you listen to the speeches that people in the Senate gave, for example, on the floor of the Senate, some of them felt that the bill had been misleading, and there were some issues like that.
Wasn't that well written, in other words?
Well, I think what you heard in some of the speeches is some people felt the summary didn't accurately describe the bill.
I see.
And I don't, you know, like I say, we weren't really involved in that, so I don't know if that was accurate or not, but at the end of the day, it seemed uncontroversial at the start, and then it became quite controversial. So.
Okay, and then the second bill that failed in 2015 was the anti-declawing and debarking bill. Please talk about that and tell us why you think these bills failed and where the opposition is coming from, at least on this second one.
Yes, and so we were involved in that bill, the declaw, debark bill. And that bill started as a bill that would just say a landlord cannot require a tenant as a condition of the tenancy to devocalize a dog or to declaw a cat. And then it got converted into a bill that would just say we're not going to allow people to declaw their cats or to devocalize their dogs. And the bill passed the House of Representatives. But what the bill said was you couldn't do those things unless you had made an effort to get your dog to stop barking or to get your cat to stop scratching, and those efforts had been unsuccessful. And it was unparticular. It was not specific about what effort you had to engage in to get that to stop. So in our view, it could have been something as simple as I told my dog to stop barking and it wouldn't. I told my cat to stop clawing and it wouldn't. So I'm entitled to devocalize or declaw. And so what happened is when that bill got over to the Senate, it drew opposition from animal welfare advocates who thought the bill wasn't strong enough and it was too weak. And there were attempts made to make the bill stronger. And by making it stronger, it drew opposition from, for example, the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. Yeah, and so it just became controversial and stalled out.
Okay, well, the 2017 Legislative Assembly is upon us. Do you have any idea yet what to expect in terms of proposed legislation affecting animals in this new session?
Yes, so there are a number of bills that have been what they call pre-session filed. And there are some good bills and some bad bills. And I'll just there's probably 20 bills or so that we've identified as bills we'll be tracking to some extent. I think the big ones are that we'll be a strong supporter of a bill that would require people who are trapping animals with leg hold traps, that kind of thing, that they have to check their traps at least once every 24 hours.
Yes, that's been a huge problem forever with that. Yes, animals languishing and suffering in traps for days and days and days.
Yes, and so this bill would require checking your traps at least every 24 hours. We'll be we're part of the coalition behind that bill, and we'll be a big supporter of that bill. There's also a bill that will make it illegal under state law to do what's called equine soaring, which is where people who want to show their horses and get them to have a certain kind of gait.
Like the Tennessee walking horses, yeah.
Exactly. They'll put things on the bottom of the horse's hooves to make it painful for them to walk, to create a certain artificial gait that's considered aesthetically appealing. And so we'll be supporting a bill to make that illegal under state law. So those are a couple of the good bills that we see proposed for the session. On the negative side, there are a number of bills, and we tend to see this every legislative session. There was a ballot measure that passed in 1994 that said you can't hunt cougars with packs of dogs. Mm-hmm. What happens is the dogs find the cougar, they get on the trail of the cougar, they chase after it. The cougar's got no escape, eventually climbs a tree, and they shoot the cougar out of the tree at point blank range. And every legislative session, so a ballot measure banned that. Every legislative session, they try to undo it.
I'm very well aware of that. Yes. Yeah. So here it comes again.
Here it comes again. Yeah. There's like, you know, four or five bills to partially dismantle that ballot measure.
So will Humane Oregon be working against the passage of that bill then?
Yes. Humane Oregon will be part of the coalition to oppose those bills.
Okay. We only have another minute or so. So is there anything else you want to tell us about in regard to important pieces of legislation that you think are coming up in 2017?
I think I've kind of hit the highlights. What I'd really like to do is mention some of our other Humane Oregon board members, if that's all right.
Well, yes, we're very short of time, but go ahead very quickly.
Okay, I just want to say we were founded by me and by Rachel Perman as our president, who's the director of charitable giving at the Tofurkey Company. Emily Ayu, who's a longtime animal welfare advocate, is our vice president. Melissa Lee, who's a pathologist at St. Vincent, was one of our founding board members as well. And I mentioned we were bringing in people from different parts of the animal welfare community. Amy Sachs, who runs the Pixie Project, is on our board.
Yep.
And Natasha Dolezal from the Center for Animal Law Studies at Lewis and Clark College. And also Kathleen Lewis, who's a great advocate for animals and an active citizen in society, a member of the Portland Art Museum Board.
Okay. Thank you. And I know that you can use some volunteers. So give us your website once again.
It's Humane Oregon, one word, org. And yes, just go to the contact tab and you can send us an email if you want to volunteer or get on our email list.
Okay, great. Looks like we're out of time now. Brian, thank you so much for being on the program today. And we've just been talking with Brian Posowitz of Humane Oregon about promoting humane treatment for animals through the legislative process. This is Dab Stedman thanking you for listening to Voices for the Animals. To hear the podcast from any of our shows, go online to kboo.fm and click on Programs. And please plan to tune in again on the fourth Monday of next month. Until then, remember that you too can be a voice for the animals.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Identities and Futures. Women and non-binary folks speak out March 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Holocene in Portland. Identities and Futures is an evening of performances, animation, and DJs, including DJ Kim Fizzy, Lily Croft, Gene Etheridge, Pocha Radicales, and more. Again, that's Identities and Futures, Women and Non-Binary Folks Speak Out, March 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Holocene. 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now the KBOO News at Noon for Monday, February 27, 2017. In local news, newly released documents obtained by the Portland Tribune show that Multnomah County Sheriff's Office employees have been illegally assisting federal immigration officials in capturing and deporting undocumented immigrants. Current state law prohibits any state or local employee from assisting federal ICE agents in capturing and deporting undocumented immigrants unless they have been convicted of a crime. Newly released documents obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request by the Portland Tribune to the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office show that at least three sheriffs coordinated with ICE agents to apprehend undocumented immigrants that had been charged with crimes but not yet convicted. The recently released documents show coordination between ICE officials and the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, despite an executive order issued by Oregon Governor Kate Brown earlier this year prohibiting all state agencies and employees from assisting federal ICE agents